Okay, we're in session two. The first part of session two this afternoon is to allow for additional speakers, an extension of this morning. So we're going to have Matthew West, Nicola Guarino, and his elder. And then the second part, after their presentations, we're basically going to discuss the issues, the technical issues, major technical issues, which I hope we're all addressing in our individual presentations. But address them from a technical perspective. What do we need to do to align, map, intersect, etc., the upper ontologies. And we also want to discuss the next steps. So this is a large slot for discussions after the individual custodians speak. And then we'll have a break. And as part of the discussion prior to the break, obviously everyone has seen the final joint communique, and we think that everybody agrees with that, but let's make sure that there's no outstanding issues in the conversation we have prior to that. Then we'll adopt the final joint communique and discuss the programmatic next step. So first is the technical, what we need to do in the 150 to 350 session. And the 4 to 5 session is the adoption of the communique, but the programmatic next steps. That could include funding opportunities, continuation of this work, etc. Then the final slot, 5 to 6, is basically for folks who are interested to come together and review some of the briefings, the things that we want to talk about tomorrow at the public session. So in particular, Doug Lund has been working with Mills Davis on the particular slant to address the afternoon session tomorrow, to make the transition from a popular introduction to ontologies to the value of upper ontologies for the public and potential application builders, etc. Why should they be interested? But that 5 to 6 slot is open to anyone who wants to participate in it. So, with that, we'll have Matthew. Where's Matthew? Okay. We have your slides too, right, Matthew? Yeah, hold on 1 second.
Well, while it's coming up, I'll just start. I'm not going to talk about upper ontologies per se. Enough people have done enough about that. I think everything that I would have wanted to say has been said at least once. I'm going to talk just about something about some experiences of mapping based on one of the standards we've in SC, ISO 27484, which is called IDEAS, Integration of Industrial Data Exchange Access and Sharing. It's just an architecture for doing integration, trying to not actually do more than point out, hey, these are some things you have to do if you're going to integrate. And if you haven't done these things, then you won't be successfully integrated. This is a few years old now, so there's some things I might say. That's the last slide. These slides build, I'm afraid, so that is a little bit, so I'll just say next and maybe so on. So this is the way ISO 18876, which is IDEAS, lower sublight. Sees an integration model, which for our purposes is not ontology. You have foundation concepts, general foundation concepts are really the upper level, the pure bits of the upper level. The general concepts are the things that we all recognise, things like car and pump, quite abstract but quite handy at the same time. Discipline specific concepts are called in here, including details of biologies, taxonomies, and the rest of the stuff. But here on this front face, they're the primitive concepts, because it's surprising how, some people think that that eventually there's some finite number of stuff and you can make it a concept out. Not our experience. The further down you go, the more there is that you can find. That's new. But there are things, of course, that are derived by combining those in various ways, and those are derived concepts may go back into the background. So that's just the structure of this. And you can have those again. Okay, so next. When you want to do some integration, do something, you need to identify the bit of your integration model that you're going to integrate with and next. Map it to what we call here the application data model. This is just a target node, in our case it could be an ontology, and it could even be another bucket. So it doesn't have to be anything else. In fact, all integration models are application. But that mapping is a serious piece of business. So if we go on to the next slide, we can look at a little bit more detail about how the mapping works. So next. So here we have an application model with some concepts in it. Next again, I think we see some. Oh, okay, you got them. You do some analysis from your source model into your integration model. You nearly inevitably find that there's something that you didn't have that you need to add. So you need to add it. By the way, this says something about the ontology needs to be open to being extended. It's never, by the way, anything like it into this sort of one-to-one thing. It's usually many to one and one to many. That thing you can get. Next. So now we've extended our integration model to IN dash. And next. So now we can identify the subset of that that is actually going to be relevant to doing the mapping. And next. That gives us the integration model subset from the previous diagram, and next. Then you can to do and next. Then you can next again. Okay. And then you can do the mapping. And then the thing I can tell you is that even if you can manage to sort all this stuff out, to do the mapping, you need at least first of all logical. There are no simple mappings, although very few if you're lucky. If you were lucky, it wasn't anything else. This stuff requires complex stuff. So this kind of supports some of the things that you were saying this morning and others were saying. You can do it, and I believe it can be done. It is hard work if you want to do it. So you do want to use another ontology. You don't probably want to use two, because you're going to have to do this kind of stuff. If you're looking at a particular, for a particular community or a particular organization, you may even want to, because there are some particular strengths. Then you have to pay this kind of price when you want to do the mapping. But this is also something that happens just if you want to integrate the domain ontology into the map ontology. You still have to do this kind of stuff and work it out. And it's tedious, mostly tedious work, and it's verified. Okay. Next question. Right, and this is the last slide. I'm going to do my piece for a few minutes on time. This is my take on what a rough map kind of lattice of theory. This is that's doing the mapping stuff. This is really about what can we share. I think it is possibly for some upper ontologies, it might well be worth doing some mapping too. Possibly more importantly, what can we share? So that, we don't duplicate things that don't need to be duplicated. But we can share things across the environment. So what I'm
postulating here is that if you think about the way I see the Lattice's theory, using John's term in a very loose kind of way, is that you start at the top with the theory of nothing, and then immediately underneath it, you have all those theories that stand on their own. And then underneath there, you have the ones with different combinations of these. This is combinations rather than subsumption in that kind of way. So, for example, you can have some core theories around 4D stuff. You can have some core theories around 3D stuff. You can have one of your set theories that you could have in what this is. The word I was using on the post was a library for these things. And some of them make sense to bring together into a more whole ontology. There are some that would conflict, and so you couldn't bring them together within a single ontology. And then there are these things that I just call existence theory. These are the cards and the pipes. We all agree that they're cards and pipes. But some of us think that they're 4D steps, and some of us think they're 3D objects zooming through time. And it's fine. We could share a bit back of the cards and pipes without sharing one bit. And I think that's something that it would be very useful to kind of have this kind of separation of those things that can be shared. And take out the things that each of us might just interview, that would make them unshareable, so that they can be. Get this kind of separation so that we can't then share the things that we know we ought to be able to. And that would fit.
Okay, we're ahead of schedule.
Your existence theory,
it would be something very simple, like it would be a certain type of subclass, superclass.
Or did you want some art there?
You would also need to be able to have something that said this thing had those in these parts. But you wouldn't be saying what part meant independently of what it meant to your 4D ontology. When you brought it together, you take what that was interpreted into from the 4D ontology. That would be the kind of thing that you, I think, need to do. And I don't know. By the way, this is an idea. I think it would be really neat if it worked. What I'm not sure about is whether it will work.
John Bateman responded to this question and discussion. He said he's done that kind of thing.
That's good. Well, in which case, I'm supporting you. So, by the way, I was
saying it's a psychological. John, I think you're on the phone, right?
Yeah, I'm on the phone.
Did you want to respond to that?
I would say we've done it all, but certainly that's the direction which we would want to be moving in, that one would be able to have a specification where part is going to be defined somewhere else, depending upon your collection of theories for part, certainly. Certainly, like to test it out, try it out in more complex situations
in the next. I can also see how this gives us an environment where we can be together and own our own bits at the same time.
Exactly.
And share things. And
yeah.
In the end, that's where we win, because we can all leverage each other's work.
Now, I can see this as a start of the process. The question I would have is what use would the existence theories be by themselves?
So they don't need to be. They would have the same kind of use that simplistic taxonomy is that they have.
Right. That's
essentially what they would do.
Right.
And how do you think they would have done that?
Main purposes of reference.
Yeah, and that's absolutely fine. And sometimes that's all it goes to be. But they're not, these theories at the top are not supposed to stand on their own. They're supposed to stand in combination. So it's actually these things, the next one, still falls in ontology, and I've got here the sort of barriers to 3D physical objects and 4D process ontologies. It's those combinations that will enable you to do the more unusual things that you think that upper and mid-level ontologies do. And mix and match within certain reasons. And I've made a very easy choice of something, but we all know there are different theories you can make about all sorts of things, like gravity and that sort of stuff. You can pull off different ones into different purposes.
Yeah. Can you make any mark? since we are talking of these three dealers with all these stuff, indeed, it's strange. Let's say there is Barry who separates these two things. The Bacto separates the 3D and the 4D, and they basically belong to different views.
Yes.
Usual so-called 3D theories, such as Dolce, of course allow 4D entities, namely processes or the viewers. In a sense, for the 3D guy, having events is a natural, thing. And of course, these things are 4D.
No. So
it is not really necessary, in my view, to stress at the right
bottom. I've had some, what's my word, some resistance to my sort of characterization of this 3D and 4D. From Adam and so on. So I sort of thought, okay, it's and Barry for that matter, but nothing, you know, if I describe it the same, that's described as 3D, then it says, no, it's 3D.
That's true. Okay.
I'm just being a bit more explicit about what I'm accusing people of doing. By the way, I'm entirely happy that they do the things that they want to do, but I'm not concerned. I'm permissive about that.
Somebody has a comment down there?
Yes. It's not that good. I'm seeing that ontologies are by different social groups. So I reckon that's how ontologies arise. They arise from cultural
processes. Well, culture is definitely one of the major dimensions of language ontology.
So, and I think also you can't really depend on that between the two such apologies. I mean, the only act of the negotiation process reach at runtime, you know, when you actually do your final goal, whatever it is, you're doing your suppression, and then at that time you say, okay, what he meant, he has this word, it's other guy has this word, what's really the mapping between them? It's some complicated compromise for those.
Don't think of the mappings as term mapping.
But it's logical. So here's a term and another of relationship, and together they have to pay a term over here and another of relationship.
So you can't explain square corners to Aborigines, they just think there's no real use for that concept.
Right, so it's not the terms that we use as humans, but it's actually what we mean by those terms. So we make that distinction when we talk about terms in the ontology. We're really meaning the units of meaning, the atoms of the axioms. So not the terminology, the words and phrases in English.
I just doubt what the community does. An example is to kick on the word gene, which has got about three different levels of meaning. The different groups of scientists are using it, but in fact, they don't have a check.
I think
stop worrying about the term.
I think this is leading us astray. We'll talk about this in the next session, but what we need to do is move along. I think that a lot of these issues of my, as the chair, I have a final word. So a lot of these issues we've actually resolved in the past as a community. There's still issues, but we're not addressing those right now. Nicola is next.
The idea is to eventually agree on creating a reference library of Arc ontologies. So next slide, please. So this is a summary. I'm going to say a few things about the difference between lightweight ontologies and axiomatic ontologies, but these things have been already underlined by Adam and other people. So the point is, why a reference library? What might this library look like, and especially how to build such a library, and also how to evaluate it. Next slide, please. So, go ahead, because there was an animation which I don't need.
Okay.
So, on the difference between lightweight and ontologies and axiomatic ontologies, the only point I would like to underline is that lightweight ontologies are fine as long as they are used within a single community. So the intended meaning of terms is already mostly known in advance. So what matters is the taxonomic reason, which this is the main ontology service. And of course, this minimal ontology service must be done fast. On the other hand, axiomatic ontologies, their role is made to negotiate meaning across different communities. When you have to cross the boundary from a community to another community, to establish consensus about the meaning of a new term, to explain the meaning of a term to somebody who is new to the community. And of course, for this goal, we need higher expressivity. But the good news is that you can also do offline reasoning, because you don't need this kind of sophisticated reasoning about deep aspect of meaning all the time. So that's why we can use high expressivity languages for axiomatic ontologies and the limited expressivity languages for lightweight ontologies. Next slide, please. Well, so axiomatic ontologies are useful when subtle distinctions of meaning of terminology are important. When recognizing disagreement, this is a point I want to stress, recognizing disagreement is as much important as achieving agreement. And of course, axiomatic ontologies imply rigorous referential semantics. They exploit the general abstractions, as Dagger underlined. And they allow careful explanation and justification of the kind of ontological choices we make. So whenever mutual understanding is important, I believe that axiomatic ontologies play a role. Next slide, please. So why a reference library of upper ontologies? First of all, understand disagreements. This is top priority to me. Not necessarily agreeing on everything, but at least understand why people have different assumptions. Not just accepting the fact that people think differently, but trying to understand why that Matthew and the other people do different assumptions. Maximize agreement, of course, I agree very much on this, which is one of the points in the communique. Okay. And promote interoperability, of course. So the reference library, I underline the reference term because it should be indeed a reference point for easy and rigorous comparison among different ontological approaches. And so a starting point for building new ontologies, of course, and a common framework for analyzing, harmonizing, and integrating existing ontologies and so on. So notice that integrating comes after harmonizing and analyzing. Okay, first see, understand what people do, then possibly try to harmonize a little bit, and if we are successful enough, then we can really integrate things. Next slide, please. This was a picture taken from a project where this was the Wonderweb project where we developed the Dolce ontology. And Dolce was actually intended to be one of the possibly many modules, or not so many, a few modules constituting this reference library architecture. Next slide, please. Now, let's see what. So so what the methodology could be to achieve such a result? First of all, I believe we need to establish a common minimal vocabulary, even informal, but of course we should adopt some minimal vocabulary which allows us to understand each other while explaining things. So things like a property versus relation. You know, of course we cannot take the sense of property as the aesthetics. Okay? We need to agree on at least on these minimal things. Property versus quality, maybe it's a little bit harder. What is a primitive relation versus a defined relation? We've been talking with Adam about this. I believe that in one answer he gave to my observations, maybe he was adopting a different sense of what does it mean for a relation to be primitive or defined. Conceptual relations versus extensional relations and so on. We need to agree on some very, very minimal common meta terms, so to speak. Next slide. Then there is the core of the methodology, in a sense, for comparing ontologies to one another. First of all, since let's say these different upper ontologies differ or may differ in the degree of explicitation of their assumptions, we need to adopt a strategy to elicit the hidden assumptions. And this can be done by, for instance, systematically explore intra and inter-categorial relationships. So how are sub-processes related to one each other? Or how is a sub-process related to part? This is a kind of systematic approach we can adopt. First, this is at the mathematical level, in a sense. Then we can borrow from a philosophical ontology the very core general issues which underline any kind of ontological effort, in order to elicit the assumptions made. I have in the next slide I'm going to expand this point. Also, it may be very relevant to agree on a bunch of common examples in order to see how this particular example is represented in one ontology or in another. For instance, in our work on Dolce, we used the classical philosophical puzzle of the statue and the clay. According to some people, the statue and the clay are the same. According to other people, the statue and the clay are not the same. And finally, also methodologies like the Ontoclean methodology we developed together with Chris could be useful just to force people to be clear about the hidden assumptions behind the abstracting category. Next slide, please. Okay, the picture is missing here. I'm sorry for Chris, who was the author. Compatibility issues.
If you hit escape, you'll see the picture. Go back to the 9.
Anyway,
it's like they both have started. Very important.
Okay, so this was Aristotle with the originally he had a book and now he has a computer, of course. Anyway, the
An apple.
The original iPhone. Anyway, the point is that there are certain core things to concentrate on in order to understand what the basic ontological commitments are. And these are, for instance, the theory of essence and identity, the theory of parts, the theory of wholes, theory of dependence, composition, constitution, properties, qualities. Behind each of these chapters, there are a bunch of natural questions which we can ask ourselves in order to check what really our assumptions are. So, what does it mean? What are the identity assumptions of this under this category? How does this category behave in terms of mereological behavior? And so on. I don't have time to talk to these things. But this is the starting point of a systematic methodology for making assumptions explicit. Next slide, please. very important to as a result of this, as a result of this methodology, the result will be to express the design rationale behind each approach. In order to do that systematically, we have to be clear about identifying what the issues are, for each issue, what the possible alternatives are, to carefully justify and position the choices made with respect to these possible alternatives, to document everything, to document the branching point behind a single choice. Of course, this is a lot of work to do, but I believe this is a way to proceed. And also, it's important, besides the kind of logical equivalence work proposed by Mike, it's important also to be explicit about the choice of primitives, the choice of axioms, and even more important, the choice of domain, because this is often something which is very hidden in the axiomatization work. Next slide, please. This is also could be useful for this work. The kind of theory we developed in order to characterize ontologies in according to different dimensions. I don't have time to introduce this, but intuitively this is an example of an ontology which is reasonably okay, because the intended models are almost captured by the ontology models. This is a good ontology. Next animation. This is an ontology which is less good, because it allows some models which are actually non-intended. And this is go ahead. This is a bad ontology because there are too many models. Okay. Thinking of Matthew is. of course, you have to get
you have
to get rid of some axioms, because there are things, right. There are intended models which are not taken into account, and this is even worse. Anyway, this is just a hint for some more systematic approach you can adopt in order to check how much an ontology captures the actually intended models. I must say that, for instance, if you take an ontology which is not deeply axiomatized, like the green one over there, it may happen that the two green areas overlap. This means the two ontologies are logically consistent, although they do not agree on anything which is intended. So the risk of misagreement or false agreement is pretty high if the ontologies are not adequately axiomatized. Next slide, please. Okay, final point on the valuation. This is taken from a massive project proposal we made to the European Commission, which unfortunately hasn't been funded. But we were actually proposing to establish such a kind of reference library of ontologies, and we were also proposing to evaluate this library using different approaches. First of all, there is a methodology-oriented evaluation according to which we have to somehow measure the impact of these upper ontologies on the principles and best practices for conceptual modeling, for database modeling. And then there is, of course, a kind of application-oriented evaluation relatively to a single domain and also across multiple domains. This is also resembles the recent proposal Bill Anderson made on the mailing list in order to evaluate. And also it's important to be aware of the need of some kind of cognitive and linguistic evaluation. We can evaluate these things with respect to their impact on multilingual linguistic resources. It is possible to design experiments on linguistic corpora for evaluating the role of ontologies, for instance, for query tasks and so on. Also, psychological experiments have been done in the past to check the cognitive adequacy of certain categorical distinctions, and this could be also something to take into account. This was my last slide. I have a few slides, a couple of slides trying to talk from the point of view of Aldo, if you want.
Oh, okay, sure, because we had him slotted in. Okay. Is he going to participate tomorrow, do you know?
Yeah, tomorrow he plans to participate.
Okay, we'll just subtract his time.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
No, these are three slides. Basically, there are two notions, two things which Aldo would like to underline: the notion of ontology factor and the role of socially constructed entities in an ontology, which is the main result of the ontology he developed, the so-called descriptions and situations ontology, which is built on Dolce, but which in a sense goes beyond Dolce itself. So, next slide. This is an example of ontology pattern describing the notion of information objects. Actually, this is a result of a European project on knowledge content objects, which has just finished. And, that's it. It is just a UML diagram, which is not very sophisticated in terms of expressivity, but in a sense it can be seen as a view on a particular more axiomatized ontology, and it conveys in a compact way the basic structure of the relevant categories for a particular purpose. I'm not going into the details. The point is that these ontology design patterns are actually a powerful tool for communicating with people and for abstracting the non-relevant details. Next slide. In a sense, this is another ontology pattern which represents how Dolce deals with qualities. In a compact way, without going into axiomatization, we only focus on the instance and relations and the path relation. We convey how, qualities are then dealt with in Dolce. Of course, I'm not going into the details here. Next slide.
What are the patterns?
The pattern is the general picture.
What's the variable? Where are the variables in the pattern?
Why do you have red objects?
You're right. The bottom line is not variables.
What? The red lines are the
variables. Yeah, because there are individuals. Rose one, color of rose one. These are not part of the pattern.
What would be an example of using this pattern for a different data?
Maybe if you go back this is basically a model, a conceptual model of the relationship between information objects, their description, the situation which underlie these information objects, and that's it. There's nothing deep here. It is just
presentation. This is fine. I was wondering about the next one.
Yeah, let's say I included this. This is not doesn't come from Aldo. I included it just because yesterday when presenting Dolce at the IBM, they appreciated the role of presenting these compact graphs for communicating about the main views of an ontology. But there's nothing deep here, it's just a presentation.
Can we ask a question? Okay, so the way that rose one is a rose is
incredibly different from the way that Rose 1 is a red object. Rose 1 might have not been red when it was young, it may not be red when it's old, it's still going to be a damn rose. How could you have something like red object with a straight face? That's like having stolen object. Just because, you know, the bracelet.
No, I'm not following you. What?
Red object is a roll, not a...
Yeah. The role of this picture is to show the relationship between being a red object and being a red region and having a color. This is the role of this picture. Just to present how a red attribution is related with a red region. That's it.
It's
nothing else.
I can explain this to you later.
Yeah.
That's not the point of the slide.
Of course.
The point of the slide is that this is a kind of
pattern. It's
a pattern. There can be bad patterns.
Oh, okay. Well, if we need time to talk about the basic choices Dolce makes, discussing this picture, of course, would be right.
The half part should be moved up one and either has instance or whatever you want to call it.
Forget about the example. Let's move on. This comes more from Aldo's side, from Aldo's work. Let's go to this. The point behind this work is the introduction of a special category, which is the category of descriptions. Descriptions may be, for instance, a piece of pieces of law or texts or documents where concepts are mentioned and where the character, in a sense, the descriptions are placed where new entities are created. And we have an account to explicitly deal with how concepts are described in this way, and descriptions are first-class citizens in the ontology. There is a KR paper about this. Of course, I'm not entering into the details. That's it. Maybe Aldo would say more on this.
We had a question down there somewhere.
I simply wanted to just, I understand that you want to finish the presentation, but in my simplicity, it seems to me that you mix descriptions with assertions, types of tokens, right?
No, the description is a document.
No, I'm talking about previous stuff.
Which
it says rose 1 is rose 1, rose 2 is also a rose.
Sorry, that picture, it was a mistake of mine. Explaining that picture takes 15 minutes.
Yeah, I think
I would be happy to do that.
Fair enough.
It's coherent.
And behind that, there is a very peculiar and very central way Dolce adopted for this approach of